Hey there, my DPC Story listeners. Marielle here. I'm thrilled to invite you to a game-changing event I'm hosting featuring Dr. Lauren Hetty. For the past decade, Dr. Lauren Hetty has been pioneering in direct primary care with her practice, Direct Doctors. She's kept her overhead to a mere 20% with zero staff, and now she's ready to share more of her strategies with you. That's right, folks. Dr. Hetty's practice has been booming, with four physicians joining her at her two locations. If you've ever wondered how to keep overhead low, streamline workflows without staff, and experience exponential growth, then this event is an absolute must. And here's the best part. Tickets are pay what you can. Don't miss this incredible opportunity to learn from one of the best in the biz. Reserve your spot now for our virtual Ask the Expert with Dr. Hetty, which will happen on April 30th. Get tickets on the events tab at mydpcstory.com and get ready to elevate your practice to new heights. Some notes about today's episode. There is some language that may be inappropriate for young listeners, so please consider this as you listen today. Also, there is a young listener who decided to join in on the conversation. A hint on who this could be? Well, it's the newest member of our family. He definitely brings new meaning to being a family medicine doctor. On that note, thanks for tuning in today. Now, on to the episode. Direct primary care is an innovative, alternative path to insurance-driven healthcare. Typically, patients pay their doctor a low monthly membership and, in return, build a lasting relationship with their doctor and have their doctor available at their fingertips.
Direct primary care, in a single word, it's freedom. It's autonomy. Having worked in the machine, as we can all attest to a certain degree, is that eventually we just kind of feel like a cog or another gear, and that as a moving part, and we're expendable, we're disposable, and if we're working for somebody else and meeting somebody else's expectations and hitting metrics that are kind of nebulous and that we weren't really taught in residency training would ever really matter, but it matters when it comes down to our job. And when I first learned about direct primary care, the first thing I noted, just how happy everybody seemed, how calm everybody seemed. And it seemed deceptive. It seemed too good to be true. No, this is antithetical to what primary care is. We're the low man on the totem pole. We're overworked. We're underpaid. Everybody's stressed out, burned out by year two, year three in practice. And these people, they're clearly subspecialists. They must be an opto or derm or something. And no, here's Lee Gross, probably the most important, the light bulb video that really tipped the scales for me was the Nuts and Bolts 2.0 video. And I can't tell you how many times I've shared that and told people just fast forward and tee it up to minute 13 and listen to Lee Gross's segment. And it covers just about all the most important salient parts of why direct primary care works. And again, just to see how passionate these people were. And I think it was rooted really, honestly, and truly in the freedom to be able to practice the way that they wanted to practice. And that was just incredibly revolutionary to me. And I didn't even know it existed. My name is Dr. Adam Schulte. I'm an osteopathic family physician in Orange County, California, and also a CrossFit Level 2 certificate holder. And I am the owner and founder of The Drop-In Doc, based out of Resolution CrossFit in Yorba Linda, California. And this is my DPC story.
Dr. Adam Schulte is a board-certified osteopathic family physician. He attended Western University College of Osteopathic Medicine of the Pacific and completed his internship at Arrowhead Regional Medical Center in Colton, California, before completing his family medicine residency at Doctors Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. He then went on to do a sports medicine fellowship at the University of North Texas Health Sciences Center, Texas College of Osteopathic Medicine in Fort Worth, Texas. During his residency training, Dr. Schulte conceptualized a new clinical practice model that would completely reshape healthcare. Combining elements of the fitness community and direct primary care, Dr. Schulte developed the Drop-In Doc, the world's first full-service doctor's office located within a gym. The Drop-In Doc's philosophy centers around structuring dietary and exercise interventions that are tailored to each individual, thereby achieving optimal health, not merely the treatment of sickness. He also has a CrossFit Level 2 trainer certificate, and he opened his doors in January of 2020. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Schulte.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Your practice is so innovative. When you were conceptualizing the idea of your DPC being inside of a CrossFit gym, what were some of the influencing factors that drove your vision?
Boy, to answer that question, I probably have to go way back to even before I started medical school, because my skeleton in the closet is, once upon a time, I was an ortho gunner. That's all I wanted to do. I had the good fortune of meeting a member of the Mayo family, one of whom, Joseph Mayo III, who is an orthopedic surgeon, just recently retired. And I met him in my gym, the family gym that I used to be a member of years and years and years ago. And he invited me to watch a total knee and a total hip. And I fell in love with ortho. And that's all I wanted to do going into med school. And I did everything I could think of that was ortho-related: research and work opportunities and volunteer opportunities, you name it. But what it came down to was I didn't have the 95th percentile board scores. And I put all my eggs in one basket with the osteopathic ortho program that we had out here in Southern California at the time. We didn't have any others at the time. This was the closest to home. And they wound up taking somebody else. And so I took a 1-year unattached traditional year internship at one of the affiliate hospitals that was associated with Western University, and tried one more time to get into ortho in a program out in Fort Lauderdale that was expanding its class spots from 1 to 2. And I made the decision then. I thought, all right, you know what, God, if I don't get in this time, then I'm going to take that as a sign that I have somewhere else to go. And sure enough, I didn't get into that program either. And unfortunately, the match had already taken place and the scramble had already taken place. And I was 6 weeks away from not having a job. And so my brother-in-law, who went to KCOM, he went to med school out in Missouri, and we graduated the same year. He was a anesthesia intern out in Columbus, Ohio. And I reached out to him as I said, hey, I got bad news. I won't have a job in 6 weeks. Can you do me a favor and just send out an APB to all your fellow interns and see if there's any available spot in any available specialty? And he said, yeah, no problem. And within about 24 hours, he came back and he said, hey, good news. Yeah, we've got a couple open spots. And I said, great. What specialty? Thinking, come on, just internal medicine, maybe anesthesia. Who knows? Maybe even ENT has a vacated spot at this point. I was just like, whatever. And he goes, family medicine. And in my mind, I must have yelled the loudest expletive ever. And it was the last thing. Going from ortho to family was just like the biggest step down. Like, no, I need my patients knocked out cold. I need them unconscious. It's like, I just want to do glorified carpentry for a living. Can't, oh man. Well, I was like, well, you know what? Beggars can't be choosers at this point. And I tell my med students to this day that it was the best decision I never made, because the 2 years I spent in Columbus were two of the most exciting, stressful, hardest working, every big emotion you can imagine just wrapped up into 2 years that I was there. And so I flew out at a moment's notice, met with the director, told her that whole story. And her name's Geraldine Erse. She was a phenomenal, phenomenal physician, and also later our medical director. And before I even left to go back home, she called me and offered me the position. And I realized this is where I've got to go. So Columbus, I mean, you know this from your experience working in the Midwest and at Creighton, is that one of my friends who did her med school at Medical College of Wisconsin said, hey, if you ever want the best job security in the world, be an interventional cardiologist in the Midwest. You will never be short on patients. And it's true. The lifestyle of the typical Midwesterner is not a SoCal fresh, fit and healthy sort of lifestyle. It's ripstick and food. It's hanging out in your basement, drinking beer, watching the Browns game. You know, it doesn't impart the same sort of healthy lifestyle. So when I got out there, I had already been a member of the CrossFit community since about 2011 and continued to be part of my gym community throughout my internship. But then I realized as soon as I moved, I would need to find a new home gym. And so when I first moved there to Columbus, I did a drop-in, which is where when you travel or when you move to a new area, if you want to find a new gym, you don't sign up for a membership right away, but you want to just kind of get a feel for the community that is in that gym and the types of people that are in there and the coaches. And then that helps you make a decision. And I'd already done a drop-in with one or two other places. But Friendship CrossFit was where I went up in Dublin, Ohio, which was about a good 15-minute drive north of where I was living with my brother-in-law and my sister. And just from that one class alone, as soon as I walked in the door, was introduced to the class almost everybody reached out, shook my hand, said hello, and just knew that this was going to be my home gym. And it was there that I conceptualized this concept of having what I call the affiliate-based healthcare center. And in CrossFit terminology, is an affiliate is the common parlance for a gym. They also are colloquially known as boxes because they typically take residence in industrial spaces due to the square footage allotment and the leasing costs being exceptionally low. And so one of our head coaches was seeing a very well-renowned sports medicine doc. I actually did a rotation with him and got to know him pretty well, and was also seeing him as his primary doc. And he went to just get a refill of a medication and was telling me about this. He just needed, at the time, it was Flonase, before Flonase went generic. And he had an appointment scheduled at 9 o'clock. He waited in the lobby for about 2 hours, finally got brought back at about 11 o'clock, waited another half hour. And then finally the doc came in all rushed and hurried and said, okay, hey, hi, hey, how's it going? What can I do for you? And he said, I just need a refill on my Flonase. 10 seconds later, okay, here you go. And he's like, well, kind of just burned my whole morning, you know, waiting for these 10 seconds. So do you mind if I ask you something more sports med related since you're sports med? He goes, oh yeah, sure. What's going on? And figuring that this physician had some remedial level knowledge of resistance training and methodology and common nomenclature, he just kind of went in the spiel and talking about, well, I've got kind of like this medial elbow pain, and, you know, taking it into account that we had a pretty overhead heavy week. We did one rep max overhead squat testing. The following day, we did heavy thrusters in a 21-15-9 format. And he said he's just watching the doc's eyebrows get more and more furrowed. And finally, the doc interjects. He goes, I'm sorry, I got to ask. I don't understand anything you're talking about. What is it that you're telling me about? He goes, oh, I'm sorry. I do CrossFit. And the coach gave him the response that all of us in the affiliate community are so overly familiar with other healthcare providers, as he rolled his eyes, scoffed, and said, oh my gosh, that's horrible for you. I can't believe you do that. It's so bad for you. I can't tell you how many patients I see with injuries. And my coach was a very level-headed guy. He let the doc get up, you know, whatever he needed to off his chest. But that was pretty much the end of the conversation and the end of that, my coach's relationship with that doc. And it's not because he was angry or out of spite. It just, what he said is, he explained to me, he said, Adam, what upset me so much wasn't that he had a differing opinion of CrossFit. He goes, if there's anything that it's known for, it's its polarizing opinions, both within the fitness community and outside the fitness community. What bothers me is that he is a medical professional who has likely never set foot in any of our gyms or seen any of the success stories or talked to any of our members and seen what a difference it's had in their lifestyle. And yet he interjects his personal opinion in place of his medical opinion and passes that off as his medical opinion. He goes, that's what I have a problem with. And that's why if we had a client who came in and maybe needed to see a doctor for something that was outside their scope and as a coach, and they were saying, hey, I'm having some ankle discomfort, and giving them some suggestions as far as ankle mobility exercises, still not resolving, then maybe that coach says, okay, well, maybe you go see a physician. Maybe they can check you out. If they had that physician and they got that same response, that physician would say, you need to stop CrossFit right away. It's horrible for you. Well, that client's going to come back to the coach and basically parrot everything that the physician told them. And the coach has one of two decisions. Either they totally defy what this medical professional's opinion is and say, you know what? No, it's fine. We're going to push through this. We're going to find an answer. What does that doctor know? And then if that patient has a adverse complication, then that's liability that coach can't take on. And realizing it, that's the other option, is realizing, well, we can't assume that liability. We can't just assume that we know more than a physician can. Well, okay. Well, I guess you got to listen to your doc. That stinks. That really sucks. We'd really love to have you here and continue to work with you. But if it's something that he's saying isn't good for you, then, you know, that's pretty much the story. Maybe if things get better, you can come back, but that's a lost opportunity. Maybe that individual had a better quality of life than they'd had at any point in their life, that they had metabolic endurance and strength that they'd never seen before, that they were seeing certain degrees of independence that they didn't have before, self-sufficiency. And now they're just going to revert right back because that doc took that opportunity away from them. And so I'm kind of nodding my head and listening to this story as he's telling me this. And I said, so if I understand you correctly, sounds like you'd rather have a physician who not only understood what you do, but why you do it, And in an optimal case, it does it side by side with you. That's a member of the community. And you could send patients to that kind of physician knowing that he doesn't have to ask you what a thruster is or clarify what a 21159 format is that he not only has an intimate understanding of it, but also sees it from a clinical perspective and can correlate that in and understand certain biomechanic principles that can relate or even sharpen their medical acumen within that specific context, and have a better diagnostic aptitude, having that more profound understanding. And he laughed and he said, yeah, but where are you going to find that? And I laughed and I said, well, give me a couple of years. And the conversations continued to develop. And even though ultimately I finished my residency as I left and then eventually came back to Southern California, I was constantly considering going back to Ohio just for that reason, just to go back to that gym, just to open up my space and realizing that the cost, this is part of the business model. This is what it, not necessarily the patient population, but the business model is to sublet space out of a gym like that, out of a facility like that. It would cost about 1/5 as if I were to set up a similar size clinic in a zoned medical office space. And so when, as part of the business side, we kind of learn as we go, because we're not taught this in medical school. Like, we're taught the stuff that we need to know, and we're just expected to get plugged into the machine and spend the rest of our years happily toiling away. Going through the conditional use permit and the certificate of occupancy applications and paying all these fees. And I would rather not think back to how much I spent on all of those, but you kind of learn all that. And I realized how much just in the two major costs for any clinic would be your staff salary and your lease costs or your building costs, is that you really can't do much about staff salary. You can only reduce that so much. But as far as building costs go, that was probably one of the most cost-effective alternatives that I found, totally aside from the fact that I wanted to be in the same proximate space as a fitness community, but just from the logistics side, from the business aspect side, that made a tremendous amount of sense. And then the snowball rolled down from there.
When I heard about your practice, pretty much just after you had opened, it blew me out of the water. And I'm sure that people who might be listening today who had not heard of your practice before are also blown out of the water, just as I was. When you mentioned the match and the scramble and what happened with you, I had a very dear friend in medical school who was hell-bent on ortho, also ended up going to anesthesia through the scramble because he was in that same situation of, I'll take anything. But for any medical students who might be listening, that is such a scary time to be in general, because you don't know, especially if you're in a relationship with somebody who is also matching in the same year, you don't know what's going to happen in the big black box of the match, yep, nor the scramble. And so, what a wonderful place to be in now. And I want to get into the fact that you have just recently celebrated your 1-year anniversary, to look back on that experience and be able to tell the medical students that you work with, share on this podcast, and tell a lot of others that, you know, if things like that happen to you, that is meant to happen. And can you imagine if you had gone into ortho, you would have missed out on what you are doing and what you have built.
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Your calls for more content have not fallen on deaf ears. I am so excited to announce the My DPC Story Patreon community. Delve into exclusive full-length interviews with pioneers like Dr. Neeti Kapoor, our inaugural physician guest, and get further enlightening insights from our current season's doctors, starting with Dr. Harpreet Sui. Hear our guests share even more, from their worst days to their best days and everything in between. Get access to this treasure trove of conversations and more by joining our My DPC Story community now. Check out the link in the show notes or go to patreon.com/mydpcstoryfan. That's patreon.com/mydpcstoryfan.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And that kind of, even before I had opened my doors, is I got a taste of exactly my quality of life would have been like. And there's a whole other social aspect to that too, as well, as far as me coming home and what was waiting for me back home is that when I was in my fellowship, we shared office space with the university system. It was actually the John Peter Smith Hospital Ortho Program, and they also had a residency program there. And I overheard one of the attendings, one of the more, I mean, I know this is typical for ortho, but one of the particularly more outspoken and a straight shooter sort of docs complaining about is that apparently with some formulary changes, I overheard him saying that they were being reimbursed the same amount for a total knee replacement, a TKA, with the 90-day global period attached to that after the fact, as a PM&R doc that was doing a nerve conduction study. And that's where I realized, I thought, because it's always been the Shangri-La in medicine, is that medicine is procedure-based. You're going to get paid more if you're in a specialty or a subspecialty, and if you perform procedures. So obviously the surgical specialties are amongst the higher earners. But every January 1, when those new formularies roll out and Medicare tries to bundle and package and reduce what they want to pay out for certain procedures, that blew my mind. And the only way, and that's the thing, is that groups and physicians, they don't like the idea of losing money. But the only way you can make the same amount if you're getting paid less is by doing more cases. And at some point, it reaches a critical mass where you just don't have enough time in the day to do any more cases than you already are. And you're not getting paid as much for those. And realizing, and that's kind of, that was one of the other things that factored into why I was really excited to find DPC and find how effective it was, is to just get away from insurance, to get away from the third party of no, is they don't, if there's one thing that insurance doesn't want to do, they don't want to pay for stuff. They're going to bite, scratch, and claw and prevent you from getting whatever you're claiming that your quality or that the complexity of your work dictates. And so realizing, wow, okay, you know, all those people that the class that I was in, they were cutthroat. They would undercut each other. They would rip out, you know, patient notes and write their own for patients they weren't even assigned to, just to try to get in better with the residents and the attendings. And I realized, my gosh, I would have just been stressed out of my mind. I would have burned out probably within about 7 to 10 years and would have been looking for another career. So you're absolutely 100% right, is that for those medical students or aspiring medical students or residents that are trying to figure out, you know, what career should I go into, or I'm sorry, what specialty should I go into? Is this the right decision for me? This is what's really great about this tight-knit community. And I see a lot of parallels between the DPC community and the CrossFit community, is that if one of us succeeds, we all succeed. And we revel in that person's success. We're not competing with each other. It is completely opposite of being in your med school class, where you're essentially, you step into a very adversarial role where you're surrounded by 150 to 250 other people that you're used to being the smart kid in your class. Well, suddenly everybody is the smart kid in your class. And some people are going to be even smarter than you. And it's a very foreign position to find yourself in. And I used to refer to myself as academic trash, is because people kept asking me, hey, what ortho program did you get into? Oh, you're going to ortho, right? And it was like feeling that knife twisting in my back every time somebody mentioned it. And I just wanted to tell them, just please don't talk to me. Just don't say anything about it. And it was such an embarrassing, frustrating, sad time, is knowing that no matter how hard I worked, no matter how much I tried to do all the right things the right way, and I still couldn't make it work. It was the most defeating feeling in the world. And I really didn't feel like I deserved to be a doctor at that point. And it was really hard to give up on that dream. But you're right. It's something about hitting that milestone of being at the year mark and looking back at the past 365 days, especially the most recent 365 days. Gosh, that alone is its own chapter in my DPC story. And it's going to be a new challenge each time, is to go through med school and take your boards and try to get that benchmark score and get into your number one choice. Rarely does it work out exactly the way that you plan it. And you just got to be prepared for that and keep your ear to the ground and soak up as much as you can. And even if you have to make that hard decision to look into another specialty, be prepared for that. But just be accepting of the fact that it's going to be better than you could have ever planned.
The be accepting part is so relatable. And anyone who is on their path to, you know, become a doctor can definitely relate to that feeling of, wow, I'm no longer, you know, the smartest kid in the class. It's very interesting to experience that when people might mention it in undergrad or post-bac, but it's very different when you actually feel that And when you see things like that's horrible that you saw, you know, people stealing notes out of charts to rewrite their own just to put on a better show. I mean, that's that. It goes back to the fact that, like, you would not have wanted to live that life. You would not have wanted to do more procedures to make the same amount of money. And just look at this January 1st, we experienced that again. And yes, family medicine, quote unquote, went up in reimbursement. But like many corporations, the paychecks are coming out as paycheck neutral. So doctors are not seeing an increase in compensation at all. And with reimbursements going down for many specialties, it's interesting when I talk with people who are specialists looking to do something like cash-based care. I have a dear friend, one of my best friends from medical school. He is an orthopedic surgeon in Orlando. And he was under that same situation that you described where you have to do more. He had two girls. Now he has three. He had to do more just to provide for his family. And it was putting a stress on his life. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. But the fact that, again, you have celebrated your 1 year anniversary, I think that if anyone is in that muck of, I'm questioning my future, I don't know what I'm going to do, it goes back to that idea of believe in that life is going to happen as it's supposed to happen. Adam, how did you come to learn about DPC in the first place?
Completely by accident. When that coach that I mentioned earlier and I were starting to talk about what the payment structure would be like, obviously too, we just thought, okay, well, what kind of insurance plans would you take and how would you get contracts for those? And would you be able to secure as many contracts as you wanted to in this model? And it was so complicated. And I mean, we get a very remedial introduction to the E&M coding and that whole system in our residency. But understanding the business aspects to a clinic, that's the most daunting task. And it's one that I just didn't want to answer. I didn't want to think about it just because it was so nebulous and seemed so impossible to understand. And I told him, I said, well, I don't really know. And I think it was towards the end of my residency that I heard of one of the interns wanted to go to a conference, which I believe was at somewhere in Kansas or Kansas State with one of the other attendings. And I just barely caught the name Direct Primary Care. And so a couple Google searches later, pulled up the Nuts and Bolts video by Lee Gross. Or I'm sorry, the Nuts and Bolts 2.0, where I saw that segment by Lee Gross. And to be fair, every segment in there with Josh, Josh Umbear, Ryan Newhoff, old Chad Savage, every part of that. I mean, it was just like this treasure trove of all these unanswered questions that were being answered just by people telling their own DPC story and their own success stories. And when I learned, I mean, that was the light bulb that went on, is that, oh my gosh, you mean healthcare is actually a lot cheaper than we thought it was? You mean MRIs don't actually cost $900, that you could actually get them for $275 cash, and that people will actually take cash patients? Wow. And then that was the biggest snowball that got kicked down the hill and just gained a lot of momentum. And then I just started to dig and dig and dig and start to pull up the blogs and other videos and reaching out to some of these docs. And that was what was so fascinating, is that finding their contact info and then reaching out to them, I was getting emails back within like a day or two. Josh wrote me back individually. Chad wrote me back individually. Ryan wrote me back individually. And I was just like, no way, these guys seem like, you know, the five families of DPC, like they seem like untouchable. Like there's no way they would write me back. And they were incredible. I mean, every single time I've written back to Josh, he has always written back. Like I've got to believe that there's somebody that he's got an MA that's specifically writing emails for him, because there's no way this guy has enough time in the day to write all those emails. Cause I know there's more than one person just writing to him. He's got probably tons and tons of residents and other aspiring DPC docs that are just like, hey man, help me do it. I know like you've got this down to a science, so help me figure this out. And they're so generous with their time and willingness to pass along their, for lack of a better term, intellectual property, what's helped them succeed the most, tips and tricks. And it's public domain. It's an open source. And that's what I absolutely love about it. And so by the same token, CrossFit is what's referred to as the open source model, is that you have a bunch of these gyms that are connected to the headquarters, to CrossFit HQ, but they pay affiliation dues. So it's not centrally governed like a franchise where you have standardized protocols and workouts and basically everything comes from the top down. Is you're given the autonomy and freedom to coach however you want, make your community however you want, set up shop wherever you want, but you're basically just paying almost like a licensure fee to use the CrossFit name. And in exchange, you get some inherent benefits through the organization of being featured on their, they have like a CrossFit mapper, like we have a DPC mapper. So if you're doing a drop-in somewhere, if you're looking for a new gym to join, if you want to see what other gyms are in your area, they have that same sort of map locator. And it's, and just, I think that's what comes back to is my original phrase is when you mentioned like, you know, what do you like so much about DPC? It's the freedom. It's the autonomy. Same thing with CrossFit is that these people were tired of being personal trainers in 24-hour fitnesses, LA fitnesses around the country. And they wanted to do something that was of their own making. They wanted to have something that they could create. And it, for them, it's the creation of a community. And what brings everybody together is the persistent pursuit of self-improvement, which, forgive me if I'm wrong, I would argue to say that's exactly what we as DPC docs aspire to do is it's the persistent pursuit of self-improvement within our own craft. And we don't get that autonomy, that same freedom by working for a Kaiser Permanente or an Ascension or one of these huge hospital groups. You're basically do as you're told and be grateful that we give you a job and that we pay you what we do and give you the benefits we do. And if you don't meet certain metrics, if you're not meeting certain patient satisfaction scores, we're going to sit you down and we're going to have a corrective action plan put in place. And I never wanted that again. And that's why maybe the marriage between the two, uniquely different, but surprisingly related industries was so facilitated.
I'm here shaking my head because painfully, I had heard a recent example of a corporation tagging doctors in family medicine, primary care, who were, you know, underperforming and offered them the chance to have a scribe, which this doctor had been requesting for years. But the caveat is that the doctor has to pay for the scribe. So basically the RVU reimbursement, it goes down significantly because of the doctor having to pay out of their own pocket for a person to help bring the company more money. So when you mention how going into family medicine was the best decision you never made, DPC is, it's almost like the answer that we never knew we were looking for until we find it. And I'm glad that you mentioned how accessible the DPC community is, because I highly doubt that that is going to change in the future, given that most people who go into DPC who have had fee-for-service experience never want to be in that community ever again. And this is the antithesis of that fee-for-service lack of community and isolation. Yep. And demoralizing.
Yep, absolutely.
When you talk about a persistent pursuit for self-improvement over the past year, what are some of the challenges that you overcame as a sole practitioner with your own clinic?
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Thank you to Spruce Health for supporting the My DPC Story podcast. The ways we communicate have changed dramatically over the past decades, but technology and tools in healthcare have not kept pace. Patients want more access and digital convenience, as well as the ability to text their care teams. Care teams are inundated with more communication and rising expectations, but are still using tools and technology stuck in prior decades. Spruce Health created a solution for the tech-forward DPC practice by creating a communication product designed to serve both the patient and the doctor through intuitive HIPAA-compliant workflows, tagging, scheduled messages, and triage templates ready for use, whether you're on your phone or in the exam room. New users get 20% off for the first 12 months of a paid plan with code MARYAL20. That's MARYAL20. So check out Spruce Health today at sprucehealth.com or check out the link in the show notes.
Oh, that's great. Happy to dive into that. So what makes me a bit of a rogue, and I get a lot of boos and hisses from our fellow primary care colleagues, even probably within DPC as well, is that I staunchly argue, and this is in no small part related to our training and profession as a whole, is that we're trained as downstream treaters. We as physicians across the board are basically trained how to throw pills at problems. Is we're taught that preventative care is the gold standard, right? Diet and exercise, gold standard. Most of the acquirable or non-communicable acquirable disease can be solved through the appropriate dietary and exercise interventions. How much education do we get on that in our preclinical training? Absolutely none. Maybe you have a unique program out there. Maybe Cleveland Clinic runs like a 2-week nutrition course. But compared to a full year of pharmacology, compared to a whole year of pathophysiology, it's dwarfed by. So I always say is that we focus more on downstream treatment as opposed to upstream prevention. Is that we have to focus upstream so that the downstream, it's viewing it as sort of like a river or a creek. Is that if you take care of the upstream flow, downstream dries up. Is if you take care of the diet and exercise management, if you successfully implement that into your patient's plan of care, then you don't have to throw lisinopril, metformin, statins at these patients. But it's not the system's not incentivized for that. It's incentivized to do sickness care rather than health care. And this all relates back to what the definition of health is. The traditional definition of health, if you were to go on Google right now, is the absence of sickness. And I'm going to show you why that's such an ass backwards definition and why we have, and probably why we have such a broken system in the first place, is that by comparison, do you say that light is the absence of darkness? Like if you take away darkness, is there magically light? No, light has a source. It comes from a light bulb, the sun, a candle. So to say that health is the absence of sickness is like saying, oh, well, if you remove sickness, you magically have health. No, health has a source. You are that source. Your lifestyle, your behavior is that source. And I've made this statement before to my patients as I say, your body is a reflection of the decisions you make. And so if you don't exercise and if you don't eat a predominantly whole food diet, you're going to be eating processed foods and sitting on a couch every weekend and the majority of your time and sitting at your desk 8 to 5 every day, then yeah, you're going to have sickness. You're not going to have health. And another definition I coined for health is that health is what's given to us by Mother Nature minus that taken by Father Time. So health is a delta. It's a change. And we have a degree of control over that. And one of my favorite stories to tell as I became more involved with the CrossFit community was one of the CrossFit Games events that I volunteered on the medical team for. I believe this was back in 2013. And Julie Fouché, who you will probably hear that name pop up more and more as she becomes more involved in the DPC community. She at the time was a competitor, but she was at the Cleveland Clinic in her, I believe at that time, she was in either in her first or second year of med school. She was studying for her step one boards. And she took the year off to study for the MCAT, or I'm sorry, not for the MCAT, excuse me, for her step ones. And her coach and she were sitting in the medical tent with us and introduced myself, said hi, said that I knew him by name. And her coach's name was Doug Chapman. And Doug was a very well-renowned coach, still is, but especially at that time was very involved with some of the top tier athletes. And we were watching the Masters athletes. And the Masters athletes were the athletes that aren't like the big recognizable names that most people in the CrossFit community follow. And they kind of got, they were kind of pushed off to the side and they competed on a track and adjacent to the big stadium where the big name, the headliner competitors competed. And I love the Masters athletes. To me, they were the inspiration for wanting to form this clinic because they were the prime examples of what healthcare looks like over sickness care. These were the ones that were putting in the time, energy, and effort along with their full-time jobs. And we were watching, I think it was the 60 and up competitors. And it was a workout with handstand pushups, a sled drag, and I think chest to bar pull-ups. And we were watching these women in the 16 up group do a modified handstand pushup. And Doug Chapman, we're all quiet and just staring in awe. And he says what everybody was thinking. And he just said, those are 60-year-old women doing handstand pushups. I just want that to sink in for a second. Just think about that. That was the profoundness of his simple statement was like, exactly. Exactly. This is the point we're trying to get across. Those are 60-year-old women doing handstand pushups. And they're not weird. They're not unique. And they're not, I mean, they're definitely exceptional, but they're not some exception to the rule. It's just, they chose to invest in their health. They chose to make themselves the source of their health. And that's how their body was reflecting. Their body was the reflection of the decisions they made. And it was fascinating watching these people. I still stay in touch with a lot of these masters athletes, and they were probably the most vehemently supportive of my practice model as I shared it with them. But I this is what I would say to anybody else, is I would want every single person to see these people and aspire for the same and be motivated the same and be inspired to make those changes in their life. And you need to have the brick and mortar. You need to have a gathering place so those people have some place to go, that they know that they have a physician that can monitor this aspect of their life. That's such a huge, crucial aspect of their life. And I'm just going to go ahead and throw this out there. Could you imagine if primary care was more healthcare oriented, that if we were educated on how to design an appropriate exercise program and a follow-up care program and how to design an appropriate dietary program and how to choose the best dietary program for a given patient, considering comorbidities and pre-existing conditions. The big picture, if I'm going to go ahead and just kind of be the Elon Musk and give away my intellectual property and my big picture, drawing on a napkin sort of goal, is I would want to create a kind of an all-inclusive electronic health record, custom-made health record, just like Josh did with Atlas, except that it has an open API that intercommunicates with a performance tracking software, as well as data from wearable devices. And so you literally have real-time health metric data being integrated in constantly. That's not just measuring the old standard, antiquated, not to say that these don't have value, but how we just traditionally used blood pressure, resting pulse, pulse ox, and those are our quotes vital signs. But instead, what if we had a way to be able to compile data and being able to use fitness related data, actual health data, not sickness data, health data, and to be able to compile that into just an unfathomable volume of research studies looking at correlations between one rep back squat, one rep max of back squat correlated with long-term morbidity and mortality for like cardiac events, and to look for associations with that. We can't do that right now because there's no central gathering place for that sort of data. It just doesn't exist. So you'd have to create it. And that's kind of like my bigger picture beyond the clinic, is I'd want to look for a way to actually be able to study and monitor true health metrics and be able to use that to, for lack of a more modest term, change healthcare overall, flip it on its head.
Not just because it's January and not just because of the isolation and stay-at-home orders that we've all experienced, but in general, when you mention, you know, wearable devices, the market for wearable devices has just blown up. So you can tell by just looking at the market that people want to know more about their health. Like I was just talking with Kate Snodgrass, who uses a Freestyle Libre for pre-diabetics. And when she said that, I'm like, what fee-for-service doctor has time to put a Freestyle Libre on a pre-diabetic? There's just no way. I mean, even in an endocrinology clinic, the discussion about a Freestyle Libre collection of data on a particular patient is not, I have not seen that from my patients who see endocrinology about their diabetes. I have not seen that as something that is commonplace. So you absolutely see there are people who desire to have health rather than sickness.
And that was one of the biggest challenges too, because obviously if that's our goal, if we want to monitor health rather than treat sickness, then obviously that's the cultural emphasis of the drop in doc. Unfortunately, the cultural perception of what a physician is somebody that you go see when you're sick, dying, or broken, right? It's like you don't go to if you're going to go to a doctor, it's not going to be for dietary and exercise advice, right? Because historically, they don't know anything. We're not taught that unless we have a vested active interest, and we take that and essentially, like what I did is I took part of my recreational interests and merged it with my professional interests and made that the focus of our clinic. And so initially from the onset, what I thought was going to be a huge funnel, and it would attract almost everybody from our local CrossFit community into our gym, or rather into my clinic from all the surrounding gyms, our growth was rather stagnant. And that was the biggest challenge, is I realized really quickly, how do I change the cultural perception of a physician to somebody you come to for exercise and nutrition advice, that you come to for fitness advice? And I thought I had done all my background work. I thought I already laid the foundation as, hey, I set up my clinic within a Cross affiliate, literally in the office. I have my level 2 cert. I'm doing everything I can to make myself as amicable and accessible to the CrossFit community and provide a service that would seem that would be high in demand, but it wasn't. And that's what was so fascinating, because everything else that was new within CrossFit, it was a new shoe, new piece of equipment, new merch. It catches on like wildfire, like the Theragun, right? Like those soft tissue massager guns. That's basically like a glorified jigsaw with a lacrosse ball plugged in at the end. Is they're selling these things for like $300 a pop, and they can't keep them on the pallets at these local level events. People are buying them up. So I thought for sure it would follow the same trend, as by word of mouth. That's how stuff develops and gains momentum very rapidly. The clinic was the exception to that rule, and I could not make sense of why. And another part of that too is that people thought that that's all I did. People didn't know that I could do things like ingrown toenail removals, that I could do physicals, that I could do an EKG. And what really helped us out, COVID saved us. COVID was our saving grace, is that as soon as I was able to obtain some of the rapid testing kits and analyzers, we used the BD Veritor. And then I just on my own noticed on Google, if you looked up COVID testing near me, it brought up these clinics and they had this special tag on their Google My Business listing. And so I started doing Google searches like, well, how do I become a verified COVID testing facility? And found out that Google used, I think it was called ArcLight, and that you could sign up and verify your clinic for free. And they would give you that tag. And so I signed up within a couple of days. I got verified. And after that, our phones were blowing up. And I was wasting probably about $300 to $500 a month in Google ads and Facebook ads, and getting very little return on investment for those. And I paused all the campaigns as soon as that little change was made and people were finding us on Google. And I think in my first month, I had like a 5,000% increase in search results. Since October, I think we had 100, I got this data from my Google My Business listing sort of report card. And it said we had 158,000 search results, or that we popped up in 158,000 search results. And that just blew my mind that we could go from relatively obscure and unknown to being one of few testing facilities in North Orange County. And that revenue was huge. I lost my practice manager, and so I had to learn how to do all the front office stuff on my own. So from about late October to present, is I've been answering the phones, doing the scheduling, sending out the consent forms, collecting the consent forms, updating the patient charts, loading the data, doing the testing. And I've just kind of been the one-man show. And even still, it was an exhausting few months. But if it weren't for COVID, we probably wouldn't have survived the first year.
And it's so ironic, you know, it just goes back to your mentioning of, you know, this is what was meant to happen. Although I wish COVID did not happen, you know, it's so interesting how COVID has shown over and over and over the value of a primary care physician, especially a DPC primary care physician.
100%. That's what I've been explaining to my current patients. As I said, hey, if this isn't demonstrable, that really it's the two big things that you can fix that would fix healthcare, is for patients, they want access to their physician. And for physicians, we want time to spend with our patients. Is if you create a model that accomplishes both, then you're going to get better patient outcomes. You're going to get better patient satisfaction. You're going to have less physicians looking for alternative jobs or different industry or job in a different industry. And that's where, like you said, is COVID's really shined light when people are just desperate to try to get into their doctor. And I actually had a handful of people call me from the line at Kaiser Permanente after waiting for about an hour to 2 hours. And they said, if you can get me in the next half hour, I will head over there right now and I will be there as soon as I can. And they have literally left the line from Kaiser Permanente to come up to my clinic. And I got them in and out, got them tested, got them their results probably before the time they would have even made it up to the front of the line.
I'm shaking my head because it's just, you know, the accessibility and time with patients. It goes back to this idea that fee-for-service physicians, you know, don't necessarily know DPCs out there until we do. but it's like once you see the light, it's so hard to not see how beautiful the model is with regards to it allows both to happen. And when it's physician driven, rather than, you know, a marketing team telling you what you have to do and they have no medical training, it's just an incredible model. It's so beautiful that it exists, and it's so wonderful that you are doing it in your community and you are spreading the word about health and about how a doctor is not meant to be a sick coach. But it is so true, though, how, you know, when you look at our coding, you don't have codes for I prevented diabetes. You have codes for how long you spent talking about diabetes with the patient. Right. And then you have quality measures where, sorry, your overall average of your diabetic patients is not achieving an A1C of 7.1. We're not going to pay you. So the accessibility and time with patients, that is so, so, so true about DPC. And, you know, it's the idea that, you know, a Kaiser Permanente could not supply a community the thing that they needed at the time, the COVID testing, when fear was, especially here in California, so prevalent, especially during the initial lockdowns, that, you know, people were truly scrambling for getting a basic test. And here you are, a DPC physician, saying, hey, you know, I'm right here. And thank goodness that it did help you as a clinic and as a business. Now that that has happened since October, have you seen those people who came for COVID testing become patients of yours, or what has transpired since you offered that COVID testing?
So that's what's coming. And a good buddy of mine, who's also a member of the gym, he is also my hostmaster for my website. And so he helped update the pop-ups that redirected to another landing page for like the COVID testing and stuff. But he asked me recently, maybe about 3 or 4 months ago, or 3 or 4 weeks ago, and said, hey, Adam, so when you have a person that wants to get the COVID testing, like what kind of information do you gather from them? I was like, well, you know, the usual stuff, name, date of birth, phone number, email address. And he said, hold on, how many people do you think you've tested, like since you got your analyzers? I was like, gosh, I don't know. Maybe 1,000, give or take. He said, so you're telling me you have 1,000 email addresses that you can basically, that are potential patients. I said, well, yeah. He goes, I'm thinking we need to do a drip campaign. I'm thinking you need to start sending out emails to people and using their COVID experience as your foot in the door to say, hey, do you remember how easy that was? Do you remember how your place couldn't get you in? Do you remember how your doctor told you they didn't have time for you? And our clinic got you in not only the same day, but got you the same day results, and that you were able to talk to the physician directly. And so we're kind of sizing up and waiting for the moment now that things are hopefully on the downswing, that we'll hopefully be able to start seeing regressions in numbers and hospitalizations and case fatality rates. But he said, once things start to cool off, I think that's got to be goal number one, is you have to reach back out to people and remind them, hey, that you're here. And because we had lots of people that would show up and that would see that we weren't located in one of the medical plazas across the street from one of the local community hospitals. We weren't associated with Kaiser. It was this industrial space. And they saw the gym name and they saw my name below it. And they're like, so what is this? Like, what do you do here? And I would tell them, it's like, well, I'm a subtenant of the gym. It was always the intention of the design, is that we work very synergistically together. We are two separate businesses, but we have a joint mission statement in achieving actual healthcare. And this is how we do it. And these are the services I offer. And it's even just giving them the most remedial surface level, 30,000 foot overview description of it. They still have the hardest time understanding. They're like, well, wait, so you're like a doctor, right? Not like a chiropractor or something else. I said, no, I'm actually a physician. Yeah. They're like, well, do you do like anything else? I said, well, of course, like I still do everything else that I'm licensed to practice. I still do EKG, sports physicals, annual physicals. I do my own blood work. I can do a point of care ultrasound. I do musculoskeletal screenings with our ultrasound system. COVID testing, obviously. And I said, but for our members, is like all of this stuff is included. And there's also some other stuff that I do, like IV nutrient therapy, aesthetics like Botox, fillers, et cetera. And we give our members discounts on those too. And that foot in the door, that opportunity for them to just say, what is this? That's basically them asking, what is DPC without even realizing what DPC is? And so hopefully that's our goal, is that we'll be able to capture, I think our target is about 10 to 15% of the patients that we saw. And even just giving them that remedial overview of what DPC is, you just see them start nodding going, gosh, that makes sense. So you mean you could do blood tests for cheaper than I could typically get through my insurance just going through copays? I was like, yeah. I was like, if I were to send you over to Quest right now just to get a CBC, they're going to charge you about $33. I can get you your entire annual physical panel for $36. And it all relates back to what we were talking about before. It's the accessibility and it's the time. That I was never rushed, that the doctor literally came up to their car, that they talked with the doctor, that they got to ask any question that they wanted to, and that they were seen the same day. And that the doctor actually scheduled them, that he picked up the phone, put them on the schedule, and was the one that came out to their car to test them. So hopefully that's going to be the value add that we can roll into when we reach out to all these prospective patients. But and plus two for the gym is we want to bring people in where I could just open a door down the hallway and say, if you want to be in the best shape of your life, if you really want to see what healthcare looks like, have a walk down the hall with me. Take a look at these people. Have a look at how much of a good time they're having and all the friends they're making and all the people they're communicating with. Like, this is what healthcare looks like. That's my dream. That's the goal. You have somebody that's invested in your goals. You have somebody that is interested in being a part of your lifestyle change. That's basically going to be guiding you and is asking you questions to the answers that you may not even really have firmly developed. And so my intake with any of my new CrossFit patients is I ask them three questions right off the top as we're doing the HPI. The very first one, and I tell them, you have one word to tell me why you do it. Why do you show up every day? Why have you been doing this for 7 years? Why are you putting so much time in outside of classes? Why do you show up every day for class? One word. It could be a noun, a verb, an adjective, whatever you want. And it stymies them. And it's because it's a very simple question. And it's very limited because they only get one word. They can't tell me this big, long, rambling story. They have to give me one word. You want to guess what the most commonly given answer is? Everybody says health. Every once in a while, you'll get somebody, but it's all related terms. Health, fitness, prevention. A handful of times, this has been really fascinating. Challenge. And there's differences between age groups, differences between genders, as far as what their priorities are. And then we go into the fun one that everybody really loves is I say, okay, after you give me your one word association answer, then you have to tell me your three favorite movements and your least three favorite movements. And what that provides too is actual, those are the health metrics I was talking about, is it gives you insight not only to, or it helps them conceptualize and verbalize concretely what their preferences are, but it also gives you some insight as far as how that person's built. So if you have somebody that talks about, oh man, I love doing Olympic lifts, I love squats, and I love cleans, and I love doing deadlifts, and like, all right, what do you hate doing? Oh man, I hate burpees and I hate running and anything that is cardio predominant. Well, when you take a look at them, they're 5'6". They've got like 90 pounds of muscle mass. So obviously they're built more for the heavy lifting movements. But just to hear them verbalize that and see that correlated with their morphology is that's just one of the seemingly countless other different metrics that you could ascribe to this and build customized, individualized exercise and dietary plans on, just starting with asking some simple questions, just asking some background questions and just getting to know your patient. And that's why I designed it that way. And I would love to expound on that and add other metrics and just to see what are considered or what will eventually be more valuable metrics. Those may be it. They may not be. There may be some that are better than those. But what's great is that before we even talk about past medical history, what medications you're on, have you ever had surgery before, any family medical history, right off the bat, I want to know, why are you doing this? And then I want to know what you like and what you don't like. And that's how we start our relationship with each other. And from there, we do a baseline EKG. We do a baseline body composition scan. So when you step on a scale, you just see a number. but you don't see what that number is made of. You don't see the ECW or TCW or TBW. You don't see the body fat mass. You don't see the muscle mass. You don't see the skeletal muscle index. You don't see where that muscle mass is localized to. And so that's why I invested in one of the in-body scanners, which is a bioimpedance analyzer that can give us fairly accurate body composition data. And what's great is it will track it over time. So when I put that patient's MedRec number into my in-body scanner, it keeps a logged record of that person. And it will actually put a scatter plot graph at the bottom where you can see the undulations in their skeletal mass and their body fat mass. If they go on a dietary plan, if that's part of the lifestyle plan that we've developed, is so you can actually see a longitudinal history at different points in time of where you've been really good, where you were at 3 months ago, 6 months ago, 9 months ago. Oh, hey, look, this is you right before the holidays. This is you right after the holidays. Look at that big bump. That's what you know that you have to plan on, and maybe start making some more preventative measures before going into the holiday season. If that's, you know, if you don't want to make up that lost ground every January and February before summer hits. And it's been awesome. And we have some people that are incredibly motivated, and they have their wearable devices. They have their Whoops, they have their Fitbits, they have their Apple iWatch. And then they also have the in-body scan results that we use to correlate with other metrics like their sleep habits, their strain, their recovery. And if there was a way to compile all that data and integrate it into an EHR and have it in a readable format, and that gave you frequent updates, like if there was like to flag the physician if there was a sharp deviation in one of those metrics, or I find myself with a lot of words because my mind starts working faster than my mouth can produce the thoughts. But just to imagine just how this would just completely reshape healthcare, and this is the way I'd want to spend the rest of my career. That's what I would want to focus on.
Absolutely. And Adam, the in-body scanner, that's new to me. So can you describe the device and how much does it cost? Is it attainable for any DPC doctor, or is it quite expensive?
Shoot. I mean, obviously it's dependent upon whether or not that physician wants to make that part of their practice. If they don't see the relative value in it, then I'd say it probably isn't worth the investment. Where I first learned about it is I was working for a concierge group in Newport Beach. I was doing some per diem work for them. And I noticed that in every room, they had one of those scanners. And I asked, you know, hey, where did you guys get those? And do I need like a special license to use those? And they're like, no, you just contact the manufacturer. You can just purchase them directly from the manufacturer. I was like, wow, okay. And thankfully, I had an in. One of the guys from our gym had a friend of his that was working at the company and gave me his contact number. And so I contacted them. I actually went down to the showroom in their main office in Cerritos and walked around and met the guys and actually looked at the different models. And so I got the mid-range model, the 570. The 270 is the intro model that will give you all the major metrics that you need. But it essentially just looks like a normal scale with handles. And those handles, there's some foot pads and some electrodes on the handles that send a undetectable current through your body. And the resistance that they encounter going from one part of the body to another, or from one electrode to another, is calculated by the device. And that's how it spits out your results. That's how it determines how much muscle mass you have, because each of these different types of tissues are going to provide a different resistance, right? And that's how you get your customized results. That's how, and it will spit out all this different data like percent body fat, total fat mass, skeletal muscle mass, total body weight, and it will produce it on a report that's really easy to interpret and isolate certain key metrics that if you were more interested in, like that one trainer, if you wanted to reach a certain body fat, if you wanted to achieve a certain skeletal muscle mass, if you wanted to determine what your base metabolic rate was. It provides all that data. What I love about my model, the 570, is that if you get a patient that is just looking at all this and it's just numbers, 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 yeah, okay, whatever, doc, I just want to know how much weight do I have to lose? Up in the upper right-hand corner, it gives you a suggested fat mass loss and muscle mass gain based on the findings from the scan. And so I think for ours, it definitely is on the pricier side. I got a special where I think I got it for somewhere between 7,000 and 8,000. And then the lower range model, I think, is more. And here's the thing. If you're wondering if a physician's office can afford this, if a DPC doc can afford this, CrossFit gym owners are buying these and implementing their own sort of lifestyle sort of plans. Friendship CrossFit opened a second location, and they actually have an entire room dedicated to doing the body assessment and doing the intake stuff. So they're basically doing almost everything that I'm doing in clinical practice, just with their own spin on it. And they're not incorporating it. They're not practicing medicine per se, but they're following these metrics, and they're basically making a longitudinal record for their new clients and adding that huge value add to being a member of that gym that they wouldn't get at any of the other local Globo gyms.
And in your practice, when you ask a new patient the three questions, is the in-body scanner part of the membership, or is it separate?
Absolutely. Nope. We structure it that we would like patients to do it every quarter, so that there's a standardized time frame in between each scan that will give you periodic results. If you want to do more than four, then it's just an extra $20. If somebody's not a member of the practice, I still offer it for $20. But yeah, the first four are included as part of the membership. And it's funny, most people tend to forget about it, even though it's sitting right next to my desk inside the exam room. And it is literally the most prominent piece of office furniture in that exam room. And it stares at them every time they come in. And I still have to remind them, be like, when was the last time we did your in-body? When was the last time you did an in-body? Oh, I don't know. I think maybe February. Oh my gosh. Okay. Can we? And it takes literally 2 minutes. It takes 2 minutes to run a scan. And so if I catch them in the room and they're back for like a, I also do cupping, and I still do osteopathic manipulative treatment or osteopathic manipulative medicine. Is if they're there for an adjustment, if they're there for some cupping, it'd be like, okay, listen, before we do this, hop on here, let's get an updated scan. And, you know, they do, I think there's a certain desire for that sort of paternalistic relationship between a physician and the patient. And not to go down, I don't want to go down that different rabbit hole, but obviously working in traditional medicine or working in a large group-based practice, you're accustomed to what I heard one other physician refer to it as retail medicine, where the patient is always right. The customer is always right. Do whatever the patient tells you to do. I am not shy at all. I am a very outspoken opponent of that sort of practice of medicine. And that it should be more of a paternalistic relationship with the patient, because you're the professional consultant. They're not. It's your liability. It's your malpractice insurance. And if you're going to let the patient make their own clinical decision-making, something happens to them, hey, that's on you. Some ambulance chaser is going to come back and sue you for letting the patient make their own uninformed decisions when you're the professional that they're coming to for advice. So I've noticed that with most of my patients. They know that about me. They know that they can't just phone me up and be like, hey, doc, give me this. I know my own body and blah, blah, blah. And if I don't get this, blah, blah, blah. They know they're going to get me, come back and be like, I'm going to say, no, too bad. That's not indicated. It's not right for you. And if you want to disagree with me, you can disagree with me in person, schedule an appointment. But for the most part, we have a very collegial relationship. People want to tell me about achievements that they're making. They're going to tell me about, they're going to ask me questions about their wearable device data, about, hey man, what does this mean? What is, you know, here's my latest heart rhythm tracing. Is this something to be worried about? Look at my resting heart rate. Is that bad? And we kind of knew that giving patients access to clinical data like that is like giving a monkey a hand grenade. Like they're going to get freaked out about stuff that they don't even understand. And so it does create a bit of a foothold to develop that relationship with something that they're obviously, like you said, they're interested in. You have people that are buying up wearable devices and they want to understand it. They want to be able to make sense of it, but it's not something you could just open and put on right out of the box and understand it in its entirety. And so that's, I think it's a great opportunity for physicians that are interested in that. To be honest, I'm actually going to be buying my first Whoop here in probably the next month. So that way I have all the same data metrics and I can understand exactly what my patients are telling me about with their strain numbers and their recovery percentages and their resting heart rate or their heart rate variability and seeing these different reports. And that way I'll have firsthand working understanding and knowledge of what it is that they see on a day-to-day basis. And I can give them more informed and guided recommendations.
It's interesting because it goes back to your having a relationship with your patients. You're invested in their health. And especially now when corporations are leaning more towards evergreen type contracts where there are a lot of sticks out there, meaning if your patient satisfaction score is not at a certain level, you won't get your full salary or your full bonus or your full paycheck. You are I mean, you're hitting at the fact that when you're a DPC doctor, you're selling your practice, you as an individual doctor or as a group of doctors working together under one model. But, you know, that is what patients are going to buy into. And that is the person that they're going to have a relationship with. And like Garrison Bliss said, you know, the power of DPC is where the patients put their money where they want to be. And if you are not a good fit, a patient can find another doctor or go back to the fee-for-service system. But, you know, when you talk about paternalistic medicine, yes, that's one way to put it, but I think it's also, that's you as a doctor, you as an individual. And yes, absolutely, you're keeping in mind the malpractice, the legalities of it, especially in California. But at the same time, you're practicing medicine the way you wish to practice medicine. And I think that is absolutely describing that freedom that you summarize DPC as.
Yeah, that's absolute horse crap. I can't believe there's actual groups out there that are refusing to give a full paycheck. It's almost kind of like a stipulated contract, like with an NFL player, is that you have to meet certain landmarks. You hear about these guys that land awesome contracts, but then there's all these stipulations like, well, you have to achieve a certain performance, and that physicians are being held to the same standard. But who's setting the benchmarks? It's the person that has absolutely nothing to do with the exchange between the physician and the patient. It's an involved third party that are in charge of making the rules and determining what metrics or what landmarks or milestones are important in a physician's effectiveness as a physician. That's actual horse crap. That's absolute horse crap. That's nuts.
I went from being a podcast listener to a podcast host. I switched to Buzzsprout, and now I realize podcasting isn't that hard when you have the right partners, and the team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed. Start with some gear that you already have. For me, it was only my iPad, my iPhone, and a quiet space. If you've been wanting to try hosting, start by trying Buzzsprout out for free. You'll get a great-looking podcast website, audio players that you can drop into other websites, detailed analytics to see who is listening, tools to promote your episodes, and much more. And if you want to upgrade, Buzzsprout has tons of guides to help you find the right equipment at the right price. Buzzsprout gets your show listed in every major podcast platform as well. So join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world. Click on the link in the show notes to let Buzzsprout know that I sent you. And if you do, you'll get a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for a paid plan. Plus, it will help support the show. All right, now back to the interview.
I want to go back to your space. Now, you described that you have your in-body scanner next to your desk. Can you describe the rest of your space for the listeners?
Yeah, what was really interesting, what makes the affiliate healthcare model kind of interesting is that when you look in why I would want to expand and why it would be very easy to expand is because the floor plan of most of the spaces that most CrossFit gyms set up in are warehouse spaces. So you typically have the same sort of form letter sort of blueprint or floor plan of most of these buildings across the board. And so you have a front office space that is rarely utilized, because more often than not, what they're using predominantly is going to be the warehouse space, because that's where you have most of the square footage, most of the open space. And so my space, it was a little bit weird at first. The original floor plan had another outside room that wasn't directly connected to our office that abutted into the conference room by about 6 feet. It was just a very awkwardly shaped conference room, but we basically flattened out that wall. We took away some of the square footage of that other room. It's actually for the child. It's actually for the childcare space that the gym uses, the baby sequestering area for parents that drop their kids off. And it has like a TV and beanbag chairs and other stuff to keep the kids preoccupied while the parents work out. So we were able to actually reduce the square footage of that room and made this huge conference room that's probably about 400 some odd square feet. And it's a joint use conference room. So it's got amenities like a refrigerator, coffee maker. It's got a reclining couch. It's got a big screen TV. It's got a whiteboard. And it was meant to be as a joint use between the coaching staff and myself, and then local area coaching staff from other gyms to start doing grand rounds. But where the grand rounds is, we would talk about a topic or like basically do like an intro to anatomy, because obviously these guys aren't doctors. Some of them have gone through like a kinesiology degree. Some of them have maybe had like an intro to anatomy course, but just to sharpen their clinical acumen and talk about how to assess or deal with certain client-related complaints. Like, okay, hey, if you've got a person that says that they're having trouble locking out an overhead position and you notice that they're avoiding doing these movements, then this is the structure that's most commonly affected. You might want to start to think about a potential rotator cuff tendonitis versus a tear. And that's not something that's going to get better over time. And it will get progressively worse unless it's seen by a physician. So that would be a soft sign when you talk to your clients about a time that it would be necessary to go see a physician and then have a discussion and maybe pull up like a research article or something like that, or something relatable, something that's not like so clinical jargon heavy that it's going to dissuade them from coming in. But it also gives them the credibility and also acknowledges these coaches and saying, hey, if you want to provide a added layer of quality for your members and be able to offer a higher level of coaching or more advanced layer of coaching, that you have that insight because you've come to these grand rounds up here at our clinic. And then we want to offer the space and we want to give them the opportunity to ask those questions and discuss these sort of topics. And so they can advance in their careers too. My exam room is about 300 square feet. And one of the last practices I worked at was a really old, it was one of the last privately owned small physician group family practice clinics. I used to say it was old and dying doctors practicing old and dying medicine in an old and dying clinic. And these rooms were so small. I mean, they barely met like 1950 standards. And there would be times that I would have to like squeak in around a partially open door just to get in and fit inside this room. And the patient, it felt like, was like at all times 6 inches away from me. We just felt incredibly cramped in there. Kind of like a low level room you'd get like on a cruise ship. Like you just felt you could barely fit in there and had to walk in sideways. And so it's awesome. It's this huge sprawling room. I've got a exam table. I've got my desk in there for documentation and then tons of cabinet space. I've got a refrigerator and some of my countertop space. I have my centrifuge in there. Have all my supplies and all my equipment all in this one exam room. So in that sense, it's like a little micro practice, but it's got everything I need and then more.
Are you doing PRP also?
I was trying to get my PRP machine right before COVID hit, and then everything got thrown up in disarray. So I was relying heavily on other DPC docs. Kyle Hampton was one doc I leaned on, and he had mentioned multiple times. Most of the people that were talking about doing PRP as well or point of care ultrasound, musculoskeletal ultrasound.
Yeah.
I leaned on him and reached out to him a handful of times, and he gave me some contact information for the group that he utilizes. Because PRP is a little bit more cost averse, I was looking for cheaper alternatives, but was going to pull the trigger on getting a centrifuge system so that I can begin doing it. And I've had multiple people ask me over and over if I would do it. So obviously the interest is there. And, but yeah, I was trained. Actually, interesting background story is that one of the foremost doctors in regenerative medicine, Steve Sampson, he's a PM&R doc based out of Santa Monica. I found him completely by accident after I volunteered for a course. It was a dental surgery course that we hosted at my med school out in Nevada, the first school I went to. And I got to meet the program or the course instructor. And I asked him a little bit more about it. I was like, what in the world are you guys doing? He goes, oh, this is PRP. It actually has its foundations in dental medicine. And I started Googling and just being like, I wonder if there's any docs that are doing PRP around here that I can maybe shadow or get to know. And here he was back in Southern California, my native SoCal. And I was like, wow, look at that. He's a doc doing PRP in LA. Oh my gosh. And he's a DO. And so I reached out to him and I was his first medical student he ever had. And he's been adjunct faculty with Western ever since.
What an incredible opportunity.
It is. And what's great too, is that right when COVID hit, I had reached out to his office and asked if I could come back up just to chat with him and get some clinical insight as far as what to do with my own practice. And just that a guy of his stature and his notoriety just casually said, oh yeah, hey, come on up.
Yeah.
that's just, it's wild to have those relationships still.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's just like how you talk about, you know, how you reached out to Josh and to Ryan, and, you know, doctors are humans too, right? But it's great when you meet doctors who are humans and not doctors who are untouchable celebrities. Going back to how you mentioned the possibility of using the COVID test emails as a way to help market your practice, had you thought about, or are you incorporating telemedicine as part of your practice?
So the EHR that I currently use is Practice Fusion. The reason being, it was the least frustrating out of all the probably 24 EHRs that I've used in my short medical career. And it's the one that was the most easily navigable, the one that I'd use the most working in urgent cares and other clinical practices. So just due to familiarity, I chose that. We have Hint Health as our client retention manager software. And then I also use Spruce because of the integration with Health. And so I make myself much more accessible, I think, than most docs do. Is I let my patients text me and call me whenever they want. And so I get text messages and voicemails on the weekends, and they know. And I tell them to be like, hey, if it's not an emergency, if you're not dying, if you're not bleeding out, just maybe wait till Monday, or just let me know that it can wait till, you know, after the weekend for me to call you back. And they've been awesome. They've been really good about that, realizing that I have a life, that I don't just live there 24/7. I've been doing, I mean, that's been, the telemedicine component has been an element that's been there since the start. And it's one of the features that I thought really distinguishes DPC from the traditional practices. Now, it is interesting how quickly traditional practices were able to hustle together the infrastructure for telemedicine when that became a necessity, when COVID was shutting things down initially. And so it just goes to show that if you're determined enough and the incentives there, you could make those kind of sweeping changes within healthcare. It's just, right, the price point has to be right. Right. The bigger health groups, unless it's going to provide a market, if it's going to prevent catastrophic loss, or if it's going to lead to greater revenue, then that's obviously going to be incentive enough for them to do it, which is probably why it was probably one of the, maybe both were two major driving factors to lead them to start integrating. And from what I understood too, and talking to former coworkers, it sounds like it was a pretty haphazard process and it doesn't work incredibly well, but here we are over in DPC world, just kind of, we've got like a shitty grin just going, we've been doing that this whole time. Like, you guys are new to this. That's cute. Well, you know, you're trying, that's what's important. Gold star, A for effort. But for those of us that have been in the DPC world, that's just part of our daily lives.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
And so that's, and obviously that's a big selling feature because it goes back to those two key elements, access and time, right?
So Adam, I don't know if you can hear my son.
I can. Who's joining us on the call?
What's going on? This is Nolan.
What's going on? Hi, Nolan. I'm gonna be okay, bud.
My goodness, is it okay?
We're just having a rough night, buddy.
On your Instagram handle, you have really great content, and so I wanted to ask you, what's your inspiration for your content, and do you do it personally, or do you have someone who manages your social media?
Again, thank COVID for that. When things got really quiet in March, April, May of last year, I tried to transfer most everything over to telemedicine, so it left me with a lot of free time, and so I basically signed up for a trial of the Adobe platform of all their different programs. And I'd always wanted to learn Photoshop. It seemed really complicated. I tried using Adobe Illustrator once upon a time, and it was just really complex. And just by necessity, I just figured, okay, well, I'm just going to go on the University of YouTube and teach myself how to do Photoshop, and just watched a bunch of tutorials. And so from that alone, I learned how to use, let's see, Photoshop, Lightroom, Audition. I learned how to use Audition. I started toying around with Premiere, the video editing software. I used mostly, what was that called? DaVinci Resolve. So I primarily use that as my video editing software. Had to learn how to use Adobe Acrobat, but more in a, to construct my forms. And so all my custom made forms with fillable fields, It was probably single-handedly the most frustrating of the different programs to learn to use the Adobe Sign feature, because it was not nearly as intuitive as some of the other programs, which Adobe on the whole isn't necessarily instantly intuitive. But it took me a solid 2 to 3 months to finally troubleshoot and run through every known expletive trying to learn how to use Acrobat. But it's because of I learned how to use Acrobat and the Adobe Sign feature is that I was able to create our forms for the COVID testing, and it has significantly streamlined. And if I hadn't figured that out, I wouldn't have been able to do as much testing as I did. And so it's proven crucial, and it's been great. I do all my own content myself. Influences for my content, Spencer Nadolski, he works with Renaissance Periodization, a diet tracking macro counting program. He's based out of San Diego, but he refers to himself as a professional memologist. So he's not DPC, he's not concierge, but he's basically just a private physician that is an obesity specialist and has a bunch of additional certs like in clinical lipidology and is a family physician himself. And really, he's a really sharp guy. He's just one of those talented humorists that knows how to tap into whatever is currently, like, obviously, like all the Bernie memes with Bernie and his mittens. Like, he jumped on that right away. And so just kind of formed my own brand, having learned how to use things like Photoshop and Lightroom, just to add that little extra layer of quality to it, and learning how to develop a brand. It's still a little bit disjointed. It doesn't have like a uniform color and font scheme that I understand is requisite for being an Instagram influencer. I really loathe social media as a whole. So I only do as much as is absolutely necessary. I've really dropped off recently just because I feel like reading the comment section just about anywhere just makes me more depressed about the world. But I've been doing my own content, doing my own videos, and it's all self-taught. And it's just kind of, you know, in true DPC fashion, is just like, well, if you don't know, teach yourself. And if you're not good right off the bat, good, because nobody is. So get better. And it's the persistent pursuit of self-improvement.
Absolutely. Now, I want to ask you, because you were talking about branding, you have had an interesting journey with regards to trademarking. Can you share about what happened with the drop in doc and the trademark journey that you found yourself on?
Originally is our business name, our DBA corporate name was intended to be Ascension Medical Group. And that's a nod to my faith and a nod to the journey that God took me down, and obviously the plan he had for my life and bringing this clinic to fruition. So I, you know, wanted to pay homage to my creator and as a thank you. And God having a unique sense of humor is I got a cease and desist letter maybe about 3 or 4 months after we filed for our fictitious name permit with the Osteopathic Medical Board of California. And it was from this group called Ascension. And me and my, you know, little naive world that had no idea of Ascension, that they were one of the largest, if not the largest, not-for-profit hospital group in the U.S. And that they've retained rights to the name Ascension within the realm of healthcare since 1999. And they probably had, honestly, they probably have like a group of junior level attorneys that all they do is just do Secretary of State searches looking for anybody infringing on their name and their copyright. And so they were demanding that I change it. And I said, okay, I'm sorry. Let me talk to my attorney, see what I need to do. And they wanted me to sign an agreement. And I'd had to deal with attorneys before back during my training. And I was like, no, I'm sorry. I'm not signing any form that you just send over to me. I'll do what I can to change the name. I'll let you know as soon as we do. And so there I was, and I was kind of stuck. I was like, well, shoot, that was going to be the name. That's what I, you know, it's already on our placard. It's outside. It's on the signage. It's on my business cards. What do I do? And then I realized back when I was, when I first moved back from after I was done with my fellowship in 2016, is I had a friend from Friendship CrossFit who was an illustrator. And I just came up with a term, the drop-in doc. And it was mostly for when I would volunteer at local level events. and would just need like my first aid tent. So it had like a signage, had the brand recognition, but that's all I used it for. I didn't use it for anything else. And as I was discussing it with some of my friends from the clinic, they're like, well, why don't you just make your business name the Drop-In Doc? I was like, oh no, that's corny. No, that's just like tongue in cheek. That was just supposed to be for volunteering. They're like, to be honest, most of the people like that name better than Ascension. I was like, really? So I was like, all right. And so I managed to refile with the Secretary of State and reincorporated as the Drop-In Doc Inc. and changed our DBA. And that's what's led us to this. But it is funny having a legal team from a big hospital system come essentially knocking on your email and being like, hey, this isn't cool and you need to change this and we're going to take legal action if you don't. So yeah, that was kind of like my David and Goliath moment, except that I needed to change the name because I knew I wasn't going to win that fight.
That's exactly what I was thinking, was the David and Goliath healthcare, 2.0 version. I'm going to hand Nolan back to my husband. I think he's there. Hubs here. This is amazing. Say hi to Adam.
Hello. Bye, Nolan. Sleep well, buddy.
Oh my goodness. I'm jumping back, but when you talked about your Photoshop skills, like I loved the was it like lightning coming out of your eyes? Like, it's amazing.
Yep, that was a couple YouTube tutorials and learning how to do the Thor Ragnarok lightning bolt effect. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. What kind of post can I make on that? I was like, oh yeah, I could do that. So there's a lot going on there, but I mean, even still, it's just, I got to get back in the habit of spending more time. It's just the past couple months, I've just been working 14 to 16 hour days, just doing nonstop COVID testing stuff. And so now to be able to finally have like a room to breathe and be able to do like the fun stuff again and start producing that kind of content. Honestly, once you kind of get past the intimidation of just how much is going on with Photoshop and you just do a couple tutorials by some of the guys that offer free material, it is so stinking fun. It is really, really fun, even at a remedial level. I mean, if you're not looking to do it professionally, you can still make some good looking stuff just from watching a couple tutorials.
In our house, we call it YouTube University because we've learned so much, not Adobe in this house, but we've learned so much from watching YouTube videos, especially this past year. Like I've become the person who cuts hair, even my own hair in this house during the pandemic. So that's awesome though. I was going to put that post on your blog. That's awesome. Yeah.
Do it. You totally should.
Perfect. Adam, for those people who are considering DPC or even, new to DPC, but reflecting back on their short time in DPC, what advice would you give them?
That the juice is worth the squeeze. You're still going to work hard. It's a different type of working hard is because like, for example, with the COVID testing, I was often in my clinic at the time, roughly about the time that the gym would open. And I was the last one to leave at night. I was working easily 14 to 16 hour days because I was doing it all. I was doing all the scheduling, sending out reports, emailing reports, completing charts, uploading forms into the charts, et cetera. And people and most of the guys in the gym, like I went from doing my usual 5 days a week to maybe one workout every 3 weeks. And it was taking a toll. And like the guys could tell, I was starting to get really exhausted and worn down. And they would frequently check in on me and be like, dude, you okay? How are you holding up? How many did you do so far today? And I was telling one of our younger coaches and I just said, you know what? I know I look beat to hell. I know I look exhausted and I am, but you know what? I would rather be this exhausted and worn out doing my own thing than doing it for somebody else. And because it's mine and I made it and there's no single part in this building or in this clinic that I haven't made for myself. And that's really profound. And that's really cool because most docs, the traditional pattern is you do your 4 years, you go in residency, you get spat out, you go into a job and that's where you work. And then you're just turn them and burn them, treat them and street them. And then you call it a career after 20 or 30 years. And that just seemed so dry and mundane and completely unlike anything that I wanted to do. And just the whole concept of the autonomy and the freedom. and not being told what metrics to hit, what measures to hit, what, you know, how good a doc I was based on how happy my patients were, or how many had an A1C of 7.0 or below. And it just, I just knew that from, and that was going back to Ohio, is seeing patients that literally did not care, that they were smoking two packs a day, drank their 2-liter bottle of Mountain Dew a day, and had already lost half a leg due to horribly maintained peripheral vascular disease. And then I'd leave that clinic and I'd go up to my gym in Ohio and I would see 50-year-olds doing handstand pushups and ring muscle ups, and we're in the peak of health. It was like two completely opposite swings of the same pendulum. And so, really hindsight, and I know this carries a different meaning now, but hindsight truly being 2020, is you don't see it when you're in the middle of it. You don't see it in the road leading up to it. But taking a moment to look back on the whole process, to take a look at all the different turns that your career's taken, that your education has taken, your training has taken, and being really appreciative of that. If there's nothing else that my story achieves, I would hope that it would just serve as a completely alternative to the typical story where people probably think, oh, you just go to school, you go through training, and then you go get a job. And that's the way it works for everybody. Is I would want people to see that. No, it doesn't. And when it doesn't, this is better than anything I could have planned for myself. So with direct primary care, this is the time to start looking into it, to start reading up on it, especially if you're not in your training yet, if you haven't taken the MCAT, is look to people like us and see that we're leaving the traditional practice. We're leaving the machine in droves, and there's a reason for it. So start getting familiar with it, because our numbers are only going to continue to grow, and we're going to push legislation and demand the recognition that we've worked hard to achieve as both individual practitioners and then collectively as a group, and to put that pressure on legislators and getting them to recognize us and how much better a job we're doing than our larger counterparts. And then hopefully we'll add those people to our numbers down the road.
And on that note, what is the best way for people to reach out to you to connect after this podcast?
Our main email with the clinic is frontdesk, FRONTDESK, at thedropindoc.com. That's probably the most reliable means. is our office phone number is 714-577-2652. It's a VoIP line. That was another cool feature about getting Spruce, is that I found out that I could actually send and receive texts to my VoIP line, and the messages show up within my Spruce inbox. And so I do text, with my patients without having to give out my cell phone number. So hopefully not to sound stingy, I don't really feel like giving out my cell phone number, but I can receive texts to that phone number. Emails are probably more reliable, or just messaging through one of the social outlets, whether that's through Instagram or Facebook, if for whatever reason I don't respond to those other two methods.
Thank you so much, Dr. Schulte, for joining us today.
That was fun. Thank you so much for the invite, and hope to do it again soon.
Next week, look forward to hearing from Dr. Catherine Agricola of AltaCare Primary Medical Care. If you like what you heard today, please leave a review and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tell your friends too. For more information on this episode and much more, please visit mydpcstory.com. Also, for the latest in DPC news, check out dpcnews.com. Until next week, this is Marielle Conception.